traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
What were your thoughts when you first heard that Jake Paul's older brother was going to join the be honest, be completely honest.
Maybe completely honest. Yeah. So who the f*** is that?
Breaking news from the Impulsive Podcast. 3 gents are sitting on a couch to bring you this important message. Dude, at some point you gotta say something.
You gotta do something.
Your name on the background.
I know. Part of it. Anyways, hey guys, welcome back to Impulsive, the number one podcast in the world. Now, when I say that, I mean it. It's data, and why would I lie about something like that? You can look it up.
It's illegal to lie about that.
Yeah. Empirical evidence.
Hit that subscribe button if you're not subscribed.
Logan wrestled last night in the WWE SummerSlam event of the century. You guys have all seen it. He went off the top rope through a table that also had a sandwich meat made up of Mike the Miz in the middle of it. His brain is now splintered into a million pieces.
You know what?
But he's going to do his best for you guys today. Logan, tell us a little bit about your state of mind last night.
I'll do my best. My neurons aren't firing the way they usually do. Yesterday was a big day. And you know what? I'm very happy to say I am feeling so healthy. I'm barely sore.
I can't believe it.
I did so many leaps, so many jumps. I honestly didn't think I was going to make it out of that without a broken arm or leg. I swear to God. That table jump, the first time I practiced it, the stunt guy goes, "You are going to break both femurs."
What? He said that to you?
Well, because I landed too close.
Oh, got it.
And dude, you know what's funny? If you guys haven't seen the clip, I've littered my Instagram with it. I'm amused. I don't know if I can say this. I'm amused by watching me do the WWE. I cannot believe it's me. Do you understand
Bro,
what I'm saying?
I can't believe it. And I watched it live.
Dog, I'm me. And when I watch it, I go, "Oh, that guy's doing pretty good." I black out during it. I just focus on just like the move. I go on some, I mean, everyone says it, right? There's like the game time performer and then the person, and vastly different. So when I watch, I don't
did
know.
Did you
I'm
black out?
Back. Not black out. Well, sort of, honestly.
Like, did it go like this and you're like, "What the fuck? How did I do all that?" Like,
100%. Yeah. I go back in the locker room and that, you know, 30 minutes of my life is just gone. And then I look at the replays with my jaw drop. And I have to give a thank you to so many people. Because yesterday, SummerSlam 2022 in Nashville to a 50,000-person Nissan Stadium was incredible. These are moments that I will remember for the rest of my life. But what's more important to me is that I'm creating moments that the people watching will remember for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
That means a lot to me because I had those moments growing up, and I know one day some kid's going to come up to me and be like, "I was inspired by you doing the WWE and the crossover,
but I broke my femurs."
Both of them.
It's really working for me in the WWE, Steph McMahon, Triple H, who's the guest today, which, by the way, we shot his podcast yesterday before SummerSlam, so if you're like missing context, that's why. It's the only time we could get him. Steph, Nick, Kristen Potty, everyone at the WWE for trusting me. And obviously, like, I did this with Floyd. I gotta give a shout out to Mike the Miz, my opponent and at one point mentor, who I did beat last night. I'm 2-0. I'm winning something. I'm winning a combat
finally
sport.
He's dirty, bro. I don't like him.
I can't believe, but you know, he's he allows me to shine, and he's not afraid to. And a lot of vets for the new guy, I can't imagine that's always easy. He understands what it takes to make the organization great. He's a team player,
yeah.
And I love the Mike the Miz for that. Thank you, Dylan.
The guy he rolls with is problematic, bro.
Ciampa.
Like he's gonna do some dirty shit. I could tell already. The Mike's wife and how do you say his name, man?
Ciampa.
Ciampa. Those two, bro, you got to watch your back when those two are around, bro.
Not anymore, bro. We beat him. It's over. No, but, dude, when I was jumping off that pylon onto the table, I had one thought before I made the final leap. I swear to God. I'm looking around at this stadium, and I'm like, this is it. You know, this is a moment that can make or break a career. Like,
or make or break you, literally.
Literally, in half.
Both feet.
Is this what he can do? What is he capable of? And I go, my life's been going so good. I did great in WrestleMania. I'm going to jump and break both my femurs right now.
Oh, my gosh.
You thought of that?
I go, this is the end of my career. Fuck it. And then just fucking nailed it. I couldn't believe it.
Do you know how much force it takes to break a femur? It is the hardest bone.
Did
in
you
your
see
body
how high he jumped?
It doesn't
bro?
Matter.
I made a point to go up.
Take it from someone who has broken their femur. You need to literally fall from the sky. From you were up there.
I'll get that done. I'm gonna have him make me go higher. I can go, brother.
That was also. I want everybody to know. Not one of us knew what he was doing. We all watched it. By the way, God, I hate to say this out loud, and I know you're partnering with him. But I'm a big fan of WWE now, bro. I was losing my mind in the club.
Why do you hate to say it,
bro? Because
Triple H on today.
No, because, dude, I like to speak real shit. I'm like, this is the podcast. I want to speak my heart. When I first showed up, I go, these guys are fucking weird. I was like, everybody's dressed weird. This 40-year-old man's in tights. And I go, dude, you're sweating. Like, get away from me. But then all of a sudden, I caught myself like, oh, no, what is she doing? And I was like, oh, shit. I'm wrapped in it. Bro, you weren't even around at this point. And I was still like, oh, dude, that bitch better not do that. And then she did it. I was like, no. Yeah. And I was like, I'm wrapped in this shit now. But I kind of like it, dude. It's kind of like a manly soap opera.
We're watching Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch.
She's great. The show. I'm telling you, once you start paying attention, if you have someone that you're locked onto and you like, suddenly the WWE becomes exponentially more interesting. And you're captivated now.
Yeah.
And you're locked in.
That also,
when they teamed up, I got so geeked, bro. I was like, yeah, that's right. Don't fucking gang up on my girl.
That also wasn't the first time that you had engaged with the ropes that evening, climbing on it. When you first came out, you had actually had a slight run-in with the corner of the rope. So when Logan first enters the ring, the first thing he does is he goes to each corner to engage with the audience. And when he came over to our corner, he, for a split second, lost his focus on what he was doing because he saw his friends. And for just the slightest second, he was a little puppy seeing a toy in the corner. And his eyes left the rope and looked at us, and his foot slipped
right past it. I go to stand on the second rope because I'm walking from one corner to the other, right? I celebrated on the one, and I'm in the zone. I'm like, yeah, I'm the man, whatever. And I see all my friends just like, and I got so excited, slipped, and in that moment, bro, I don't fucking care what everyone in the arena thinks, but I care what you seven people think, right? They're gonna fucking roast the shit out of me, bro.
I pulled this picture off.
I was so embarrassed.
When he walked away, all of our head goes, ooh.
Bro, because it's so,
and the way he cheered afterwards, like, he was like this in the beginning, he's like, yeah, and then he missed it, and as he was walking away to go to the other side, he goes, yeah.
This is the new WWE superstar, can't even get on a fucking rope when he enters the ring.
Hey, but you made it up, bro. I've never seen so many backflips on a guy's spine in my life, like, ever. That was incredible.
I was so tired. I cannot remember the last time I've been that tired. In my life.
Oh, I know. You saw me. You were going to die.
I think I had a heat stroke.
No, you did. You were like, we left the room because we're like, dude, we need to get out of here. He looks pretty messed up. And then I walk, and then backstage, all the wrestlers are like walking around. I saw your partner like walking by, like you beat the shit out of him, dragged him around the ring, and he's like, anyone want to get ice cream? Like, and then I come back into the room to be like, dude, you got to see. And Logan's just
on the tile, ice on my chest, ice on my head, on my neck. I don't know what happened. I think those leather pants,
bro. Like, you wore pants.
Think about it. Half my body is not breathing at all.
Yeah.
And I did coffee before and I was kind of off, but insane, man. Insane. Life's been good.
I mean, it's good for us. It's wild to just be there watching it. And we got to get really up close when you went through the table and run over and throw in a few extra cheap shots on The Miz.
Bro, you finally threw a right hand. I was actually pretty excited about that.
I can't believe it, right?
You dunked and bop. pop. Milton was like, finally. He was so happy. He shed a tear. I wiped it from him.
You know, maybe it is my sport. We'll get into a little bit more of the details of WWE in the future and the way it works behind the scenes with Triple H today. But
other big fighting news today.
I want to say first, before we do that, like one more quick little gassing myself up here. Prime just became the official sports hydration partner beverage for Arsenal. The soccer team.
Bro, you're in a coma somewhere. I hope you know that. None of this shit's real, dude. You're sleeping. The nurse is like, oh, he's still sleeping. And you're like, Arsenal.
It's not real
WWE.
Life.
WWE.
It's not real life. It's that is massive. And I have to be honest, I haven't always been the biggest soccer fan, but JJ was, and Arsenal loves JJ, right? Like, that's part of the reason he's such a good
London's
partner.
Usually,
bro. Like, he runs the UK, and Arsenal really respects him, and JJ loves Arsenal. And so for him, it was a dream come true. But for the business, you know, this solidifies that we are a true competitor. Yep. We are a better for you, better tasting hydration beverage that is rivaling some of the biggest companies in the world. Our data shows how competitive we are in this market, but now we have one of the best sports teams in the world representing and using our drink to fuel them for their sport.
Yeah, that's huge, bro.
Huge.
Are you able to share that data point? It wouldn't take it if it wasn't great.
That one data point.
Yeah, Prime is now a 1% market share in hydration. So for every 100 bottles of hydration beverages sold, one of them is Prime. Which doesn't sound
that's huge.
It's big. It's massive. Very.
Are you? Are we competing with like every beverage?
Every
or just sports beverages?
No,
hydration drinks.
Hydration.
It's massive.
That's
It's basically when other companies, when you get that 1% of market, when they start paying attention, when they start saying, "Wow, we got either a problem here, a possible acquisition here, a competitor here." Like until you get that 1%, you really don't matter. But now, like. That's major. That's
how far are you taking this? You want to keep this forever, or are you trying to get bought out?
My ultimate goal would be for this to become a legacy brand. I think that's so cool. Like for this to be around, expand the product, right? Prime is an amazing brand, and we're capable of making an amazing product. What else can we make in the beverage category? And I think it can be a legacy brand. JJ is poised to do amazing things in life. So young, 29 years old. I'd like to think I am too.
Young.
Bro, we're young. We are just getting started, scratching the surface. So that's why it's exciting. Anyways, enough of that. Jake's fight. Apparently I'm walking out to go to fight WWE. And we get some news on Twitter. I didn't find this out until afterwards, but
I was
about to show Pam right before you go on.
I was the first person to see it.
That's very Mike. That's very Mike.
I was the first person to see it, and I was like, dude, fuck, bro. This is wild. I can't believe this is happening. I immediately felt really bad for Jake. He's obviously been training his life away for this fight.
His fight got canceled.
Again.
Oh my God. Evidently because Hashim couldn't make weight.
I mean,
people are saying he's ducking, bro.
You know, at what point do you not want to try to make the weight because you're a little nervous? Like, at what point is it not worth it? I can't believe it. I can't believe the social media stars scaring off the real boxers. They're all backing out. The kid can't get a fight. And we feel so bad for him. Like, if you had any idea how grueling training camp was, the 4 hours of training per day, the sparring, constantly getting hit, having to eat right, making sure your diet's correct, sending your girlfriend back to LA because you don't want to get oxytocin boosts so you can stay in killer mode. Like, for weeks, months on end. Like,
fine, I'll box him. Send me the contract, Jake. I want the same amount of money.
And he has to pay everyone on his payroll. He has to pay for the jets that were supposed to take him to and from New York. And every single fighter on the undercard.
Oh, he lost millions.
Lost millions. Every single fighter on the undercard no longer has a fight. Who have
Serrano,
also been working their ass off. Amanda Serrano. Like, oh, man, it's devastating is the word.
Do you know if he loses the MSG deposit?
I don't know
how that works.
I don't know.
Because they asked Dana White about it last night at the UFC after, and he said his everybody's deal is different. But, I mean, you probably got to drop a few $100,000 just to lock in the shit. It's just a mess.
We have a new sponsor. They're called Good Ranchers. They sent us some meat to Puerto Rico, and it was good. It was great. Every single steak from Good Ranchers receives the highest USDA grade possible. Plus, this meat is 100% American. They consistently deliver the best quality every single time right to your door. You can take your meals to the next level with Good Ranchers. Plus, they're
are giving an exclusive offer of 2 free 18-ounce prime ribeyes to anyone that uses my code Logan at checkout. These are seriously big ribeyes that you can get for free. You're going to have an outstanding source of protein that tastes great, makes you feel great, and makes sure you're fueled to hit your goals. Head on over to goodranchers.com/Logan to claim your $80 of free prime ribeyes before they're gone. Eat like a king.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Every night with ribeyes, T-bones, Wagyu burgers, and more. Remember, use the code Logan to get your free gift of 2 prime ribeyes today at goodranchers.com.
Now, free steaks!
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Back to the program.
Your mom had some choice words to say back to Haseem after this happened. So Jake had put out this kind of report on what had happened, why the fight had been canceled. Your mom quote tweeted it and had written just simply, "You're a pussy," at Haseem.
Great writing.
Went for the guy's throat and, you know, was nervous.
Here's what happened. Mike took my mom's phone and tweeted from her phone. Like,
in Mike's defense, she had this paragraph of nonsense. And he goes, "Listen, let me wrap it up for you." He deleted everything and he just goes, "You're a pussy." And then she looks at me, she goes, "Is that great?" I go, "Listen, I trust Mike on this."
She goes, "Should we send this to the team to like review first?" I go, "Pam, I already tweeted it. It's been tweeted for 5 minutes."
He has one on draft, actually. She goes, it's draft one for her. Tell him the draft one.
I don't remember it.
It's now. Man. Okay, so he has one in the draft, and she says it's on site.
Oh, it's on site. Yeah, she was like, "I like that. Tweet that one."
So she goes, "What site is it?" I was like, "Nope, just let him tweet."
So Haseem responded to it. And, you know,
no, he did not.
Yes, and.
What was it? God, Haseem responded to my sweet mother, yeah, calling him a puss.
And from what I understand, Mike, so did the New York State Boxing Commission. Dude.
Haseem's mom?
I think I may have unintentionally started a major battle here. Oh, wow. He's been very active the past however many hours.
We have a podcast with Jake, which is also why it's problematic. Selfishly, we have a podcast with him, and for a good, you know, 10 minutes of it. It's a great podcast. It's coming out either later this week or next week. But we were talking about his fight. We're gonna have to cut around all that, do the surgery, so you guys don't have to hear the bullshit.
He's saying, so Haseem is saying, tweeted, "Jake and his team canceled the fight, not me. The fight isn't happening on their accord, not mine."
Yeah.
He said to your mom, your mom said, once again, surprisingly, I can't believe she would say this, "You're a pussy," at Haseem. And he said, "Somebody put some," I don't know if I really want read this.
Say it, Mike.
Actually, can you read it?
All right. "Somebody put something in this wrinkled bish mouth. My zipper stuck, and we go and see who da pussy when you run into my mama. Somebody put something in this wrinkled bish mouth. My zipper stuck, and we go and see." Oh, it's on site when I see this motherfucker.
That's a pretty like aggressive thing to like go.
Is there a way that I could like go back and not tweet that? Because, like, yo, this was not my intent, man. And oh, Evan, shit, you should have stopped me. She actually just sent a voicemail, which she said, "Did you see Haseem's response to me?" And I said,
use the draft.
I said, "Yeah, maybe don't." I said, "Maybe don't respond." She did just send another voicemail. Should I play it?
Sure.
It's 34 seconds.
No.
Okay. Damn. Well,
Yeah, the Jake episode's coming soon. We still have plenty of meat in that podcast. We have a special message for Andrew Tate. We got Triple H going on the podcast. It's an amazing episode. If you have not subscribed, hit that subscribe button. And yeah, let's cut to yesterday.
I'm sorry, Pam.
Hey, Steph. How are you?
Hey.
How are you?
Hey.
You mind if we watch?
No, no, not at all. No, please join us. All right. Does the volume sound good?
Yeah, it's good.
You're comfortable?
You guys went with the old guy's deaf, right? You turned it up.
Turn up position three's headphones.
It's on the highest setting, so if we blow out your eardrums,
yeah.
Apologies on behalf of Mike.
My hearing is really good. It's my vision. That's
more. Can you see me right now?
I can. Distances are fine. If you ask me to read something, I'm not even close.
I can't even read. Whoa.
Well, that's not because of my vision. That's because I'm stupid.
It's just a skill set. It's a skill set thing that you never learned.
I'm mastering it.
Yeah.
I got an intro for you.
Go.
Are you ready? Our guest is one of the greatest and most iconic WWE superstars of all time. He transitioned out of the ring and is now the executive vice president of talent relations and is officially the head of WWE creative. He's actually my boss. He is the 14-time world champion. He is the cerebral assassin. He is the king of kings. It is the game. Triple H, ladies and gentlemen.
That's a good aggressive read. I like it.
Thanks. I've been working on my mic skills now that I am a WWE superstar. I have a ways to go, but yeah. It's funny because you're actually my boss, but unfortunately, since you did come like 15 minutes late, I don't know how to say
20.
This. You're fired.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks for having me.
No, please. Yeah. No, it's an honor to have you.
I was debating quitting when I was upstairs, and then you fired me when I got here.
He's like, I gotta go do this idiot show right now.
No, you're. I can imagine how busy you are. Did you fly in today, last night?
Dude, this week has been, you talk about getting shot out of a cannon. So Tuesday I left, we're prepping for this, and then Tuesday I leave home to come down here because Wednesday morning early. And Tuesday, the only reason I was there was it was my daughter's birthday Thursday, but I wasn't going to be there. So I spent the day with her on Tuesday as a make good for the Thursday. Dad and husband priority over everything else, yep. Right? And then so Tuesday night I flew here. Wednesday we started tryouts. We had 50 college athletes and NIL athletes at the Wild Horse Saloon, which seems like a funny place to do an athletic tryout.
You're in Nashville.
Yeah, but you're in Nashville, it is Nashville, right? The Wild Horse. But so flew in Tuesday night, started that on Wednesday. Wednesday afternoon, when we wrapped the first day of tryouts, I flew back to Connecticut, had a business dinner with some of our partners, got up in the morning, had a board meeting from the morning until 3 o'clock, got on a plane, flew back here, came straight to the tryouts again. Was there for that. I'm trying to think now. Smackdown. What was that?
Smackdown.
Yeah, but what did I do in between there? There was
there was
something else that I did. So Thursday I flew back, did the second half of the tryout. God, there was something else I did in between there. But anyways, then
yoga.
Yesterday. No, I hadn't had time for my yoga. Yeah, I wish I did.
Is there any leisure jammed in there? Like, did you go to Topgolf or something? Nothing?
The leisure was driving from Wild Horse to the hotel, back to Wild Horse.
Nice.
Or to the airport. But then yesterday we started first thing in the morning, had tryouts again, then media, then some stuff with fans, then got on a plane, flew to Atlanta, did SmackDown, got back on the plane, flew here, was at Taker's one-man show last night, got up this morning. I'm here with you guys. Head over to the stadium and watch you, if there was a roof on it, blow the roof off.
Yep. No roof, by the way, is interesting. I'm wondering if it's going to be humid, if the energy is going to be different.
Nah, dude. So the one thing, it's funny, like those stadium shows, the energy will be different because there's a slight delay. As weird as it sounds, it's not really that far away, but there's a slight delay. So when you do something, there'll be like a gap and then a reaction.
Interesting.
Right? It'll be slightly different. And the sound a lot of times goes up. So smaller venues, like one of the loudest arenas for me in the country is Chicago, is Allstate Arena. It used to be called the Rosemont Horizon. I've been in that place. I can recall distinctly in like late 98, 99, wrestling Austin in that building. It was right after Shawn got injured. Austin had just become champ. He was crazy over. And I can remember laying in that ring, and we've done about a 40-minute match or 45-minute match, laying in that ring closer than we are and having to scream at each other to communicate. And we just couldn't, and Steve's deaf anyways, but we could not, just could not hear each other. It was so incredibly loud. So buildings like that, where it's tight and the roof is small and it's got a wooden roof, it's made acoustically well.
Yeah.
That is the it almost vibrates through you, right? Stadiums are different.
Yeah. I'm new to this, obviously, and so there's gonna be an interesting dynamic here, because I'm curious, right? As the new guy, and I'm sitting in front of a vet, a legend, and now my boss. but I noticed distinctly how much louder and how much more I could feel the energy just last week at MSG.
Yes.
Oh my god, so loud. I'm not doing arena or like stadium performances often, but man, Madison Square Garden went nuts, man.
Yeah. And I also think that just the fact that you're at the Garden, like you're
add to it.
Yeah, your adrenaline and everything else amplifies, right? So like to me, when you're geeked like that, that's the first time you perform Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, and we opened too, right. with physicality. We were going crazy.
Yeah, I know, right? And you blew the roof off the place. But and let me just say this to you, to your credit, right? And Mrs. The Garden is probably the most jaded arena in the world, mm-hmm. right? They are like, we used to say back in the day sometimes, like, God, I mean, you got to cut somebody's head off with a chainsaw on this joint to get the decay, right? They've seen it all.
Inside and outside the Garden.
From Bruno to Hogan to Cena to Rock to Austin to just everything, right? Yeah. And they've seen it all. They've done it all. And that's the place where, like, if you get them at the Garden, you got it.
Yeah.
And you got them at the Garden, dude. Thanks, so hats man. Off.
So thanks. Nashville's roofless.
It's like roofless. It's Nissan Stadium.
So you've performed, actually, just to remind you, at a roofless stadium fought a really small boxer by the name of Floyd Mayweather in a roofless stadium. I remember it was pouring rain.
It just, the fandom is different.
Saz, but also let me tell you the difference in that. So you box a dude like Floyd, you have one focus.
Yep.
Right? I don't care if you're fighting anybody. You have one focus. Right? An athletic event is different. One focus. It's the person in front of you. Right? You're not so worried about fans. You're not so worried about the reaction. It's like, I'm trying not to get tagged and get knocked out and embarrass myself in front of the world. Right? Yep. Or whatever that is. Your focus is clean. Our job is to make them go crazy. Your focus is on their reaction.
I can't believe you're saying this. I just told this to my girl this morning. I'm trying to gauge how I feel going into this new venture. And even like, he's been making fun of me. I've just been like quiet this trip and like super reserved, collecting my energy, because I have never thought about this much stuff in my life for a performance.
Yeah.
Like I want to put on a good show. It's not just about the physicality. I got to be an entertainer. And you told me that.
I said it to you, WrestleMania. Right? Because I feel like that's the gap that people have, right? Even our talent that have been doing this a long time, it's not the moves, right? It's like watching a movie. How many movies have you seen with crazy budgets and special effects and CGI that visually you go like, holy shit, that's amazing, right? And no one cares.
Story
sucks. The movie bombs, right. There's no story. No one really fully cares, right? Because it's not about the moves, what we do. It's about what you do in between. It's the characters and the story. That's why I was saying to you, like, you know what you're doing, right? You've walked through this. You've done it. You're ready to go. You know the moves. You're an athlete. Crazy good athlete that Thanks. Has picked this up like that. That's not easy to do. I've only seen less than a handful of people be able to do what you've done.
Thank you.
Right? That's amazing, and you should be proud of that. But the truth is, the athleticism, all those other things, I can make a way longer list of terrible athletes that were incredibly over in this business than I can crazy athletes that were the be-all, end-all, right? People that are fanatics about what we do go like, oh, my God, that match was so good. Those guys are so good, right? And everybody else is like,
Yeah.
Remember, the two guys had a good match. I don't remember what their names were, but they were really good.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you want to be memorable. Capture their emotions, right? My wife uses a quote from Maya Angelou all the time about people don't remember what you say, They don't remember what you do. They remember how you
made them feel.
Right? Yeah. Our business is about feel. If you make them feel, it's the in-between things that make them feel. It's that, it's the wide world of sports. It's the thrill of victory. It's the agony of defeat. It's those moments where you can't believe that, oh my God, I hit this guy with everything I had. He just kicked out. It's that moment after that. And if guys slow down and let that story register, the level of, when you're new at this or you haven't fully grasped that concept yet, you do something, it gets a massive reaction. And you're like, oh my God, that's cool, right? And now your adrenaline's up and your instinct is to go to the next thing and let's get them while they're hot and do this thing. Sit, wait, let them not know what's next and they will start to rumble, right? The anticipation of like getting to the edge of your seat. You need those moments where you look at your friend next to you as an audience member and go, holy shit, what's gonna happen now? I've seen it, oh my God, I don't know where they're going. This is crazy good, right? Yeah. Like, you need those moments. That's where this becomes magic. The rest of it just becomes a movie that you go like, wow, that was a really cool movie. And then a day later, you've totally forgotten about it, as opposed to something that makes you, you watch it and then you talk about it for 5 days afterwards. Holy shit, can you believe that? I'm still thinking about that movie.
We're talking about this with Roman Reigns, and he sits in the silence and he just lets it simmer and
it's magic.
Brew. Something I know nothing about, but he just what everybody in the audience just sat there waiting, biting on what he was going to say next. And I wanted to ask.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Ask you, how long did it take for you to go from getting out there, handling the core tenets, the physicality, the main parts of the performance, before you started to layer in those minute details that really drilled home to the viewers? Because that's when I'm waiting for like him to reach that point where he starts to own the core tenets of the performance and starts to layer in his real personality.
So it takes time and everybody's different. I think for me, I was lucky in my generation coming in, right? So I come in 95, I come into WWE and I've got Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, 1-2-3 Kid, who was like a measuring stick here in some manner, right? I'm working with Razor Ramon every night. I'm working with Diesel. I'm like all these people, all these guys that have incredible experience at being storytellers, not being, you know, just doing the movements and all that stuff, right? Like Scott Hall, one of my really close friends, you know, unfortunately passed, but like I learned. He's so underrated in this business. I learned so much from him, right? Because he would be the guy that like, you know, he just talked like Eeyore, but he would be like, afterwards, he would just say shit so simple like, why are you getting up so fast right there when we do that thing? Like, it makes no sense. Like, dude, lay there and just let them come and they're gonna rumble, you know? And then the next night we'd get out there and he'd be like, don't move. Right? We'd lay there and all of a sudden, like the people would be going apeshit. I'd be like, oh my God, boom, light would go off, right? Stuff like that. I learned more from working with guys like the Bushwhackers.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Because like I remember one time we were in we went to Kuwait like right after the war was over and they brought us over there for like a 6-day run. It was actually great. We were in the same hotel every day, which half of which was missing from a bomb. But we were in this hotel and every night we'd go work the same arena, but every night was different. So like one night I'd work with Razor, one night I'd work with Kid, one night I was working with Butch, you know. But, you know, those guys were older and they wanted to have fun and they wanted to make it different. And so you had to learn how to tell a story with them without making them take a bunch of bumps and without doing other things. And that's that period of time for me is when I learned that aspect of it, psychology and crowd control, not crowd controlling me, crowd controlling them. You know what I mean? And when you get there where you have that crowd. And even if you're thinking, I'm going to do this next, because that's what we've talked about doing, but you're, you know, you get to that moment and you go like, yeah, I know that's what we're supposed to do, but if we do this, they'll go double nuts. Mm. And you call an audible and you switch it and you do something else, right? And there's the moment where it just becomes alive because you're guiding them. They're giving you that feedback, but then you're taking that feedback and going in a totally different direction to go like, you think you know where we're going, watch this. That's when this thing, like we used to always do that back in the day. That's the main line, right? Like when you get there and can do that, dude, and there's nothing that can ever happen in the ring then that's out of your control.
Do you have a moment that like stands out to you as like the craziest moment that ever happened to you in your career?
Dude, I make you a list. But like, I'll give you an example of just something that one time Rock, Kurt Angle, and myself were in a storyline. We're having a triple threat match at a big pay-per-view. Steph's a part of that. She's in the back. As a part of that match, Kurt is going to get put through a table by me. And I'm going to pedigree him through a table. He's going to get knocked out, and they're going to cart him off. Except we get up on the table. I hook Kurt's arms, and as we're about to go for the pedigree, the table breaks from underneath us. And I'm looking down to try to protect Kurt because I got his arms. And, like, I'm, you know, first rule, right? Protect your opponent. I'm trying to protect him. But we come down, and I watch his head smash into a control box, right? And it's funny, right? We hit, and I go down, and I hear Kurt start snoring. He's out, like, cold. So I put my hand on him. I go, Kurt, you okay? And he wakes up, and he starts trying to get up and take a mouthpiece that he doesn't have in out of his mouth. And he's, like, trying to get up. So I grab him by his straps. I pull him down. I said, dude, don't move. And I hold him there. But I realize, and I tell the referee, like, he's out. So they take him on a cart to the back.
Which was supposed to happen,
except for he's out and has no idea where he is. And we don't know if he's coming back. And the whole finish is him coming from the back with Steph and coming from the back and doing all this stuff. Now, this is where the story gets terrible because today we know about concussions and right everything else. None of this should have ever happened, but we didn't know this at the time. But, you know, Kurt goes in the back. Rock and I are just working now, like all now we're off script and we're just working and we're just talking to each other, and at some point we're getting feedback from the back through the referee, and like finally I just tell Earl Hebner, do not tell me one thing with a lot of expletives in here that they say from the back. I don't give a shit. I need one thing. Tell me if he's coming back, if he knows where he is. That's it. That's all I need to know. And tell me when. We'll just keep going until somebody tells me he can come out or he ain't coming. I'll figure out a finish. But halfway through what we're doing, you know, we're just like in uncharted territory. We get a note. Kurt can come back when you're ready. He has no idea where he is.
So he met one of the parameters.
Yes. So, you know, Rock and I talk about it. All right, let's go. Here comes Kurt. We see him coming. Steph has him like a kid, like walking him down the ramp. And he's glazed over. He has no, like... He has no idea where he is. And now Rock and I start doing stuff with him and literally, like, just telling him what to do. And, like, at one point, like, I go to punch him. Steph's behind him. I gotta punch, but he's got to duck the punch. And I'm going to hit Steph. And, like, he can see me rearing up, but he's just looking at me. Like, I know he is not ducking. I grab him by the neck and I pull him out of the way, you know, so I can hit Steph. Like, that's the kind of stuff, like, you just can't. There's no way to plan for it. There's no way to anything, right? And when you watch that match back, you go like, oh, my God. I would never know anything was wrong. I would never know anything was amiss, any of it. But for us, we were flying without radar and just going. And when you get to that place, you know, you can do anything. But it's a challenge, and stuff happens. You know, it just is what it is, right? Injuries happen. Moments happen where things change, and you got to just be able to switch on the fly. Not you, obviously, yet. But, you know, if you do this long term and you do it long enough, you get there.
I've heard these stories about being able to adapt, and it is so crazy to me. Again, as the newcomer, like, WWE is a living, breathing organism, and everything changes and happens so quickly. But at the same time,
while it is living and it is breathing, it's also a machine, a very well-oiled machine, right? Yes. I've never been involved with an organization that functions with such fluidity. I'm told where to go. I'm told what to do. And I listen. I'm a good employee.
Appreciate that.
Please don't fire me. But it is exciting. That's what makes it so interesting. I want to talk about your rivalry with The Rock.
Yeah.
Legendary.
Yeah.
And what he's done with his career has been incredible, and you know, kickstarted by the WWE. You guys both have had prolific careers, and what you've done for the organization is amazing. But the rivalry with The Rock was one of the coolest things I think that's happened.
It was for me. You know, at the time, you don't realize it. We've all talked about this. Me, Stone Cold, Rock. We've all had these conversations at separate times. What an era that was, and the talent, and what we had to work with each other, and it just was a special time. But at the moment, it was just like Thursday. You know,
it's so weird.
Yeah, you didn't understand it at the time. Now you look back and go like, oh my God, it was so amazing and so wonderful, and the people that we had to work with, you know, on any given night. Like, I can make you a list of the most talented guys ever in the history of the business, and I was getting to work with them, you know. So when Rock came in, you know, I was kind of just getting past my hurdles here and was sort of getting elevated into a position. Rock comes in as the new guy, you know, and then our careers sort of do this, like, alignment with each other where it's like we fight over the Intercontinental title as two guys just trying to make a name for themselves. Then we do make name for ourselves, and we're still fighting over the Intercontinental title, and it goes as high as, you know, ladder matches at WrestleMania, SummerSlam, and like these huge moments. Then he gets into the Nation and goes from being Rocky Maivia to The Rock, and he's with the Nation, and I'm with DX, and now we have this rivalry with those two groups, and then we bounce out of that. He becomes a heel. I'm the babyface still. Then it flips,
yep.
And he becomes the babyface, and I become the heel again. And now we're having this rivalry over the WWE Championship, and just moving up the line. Austin gets injured and has to leave, and Rock and I, you know, he'd put himself in a place as the number one babyface, you know, right in line with Steve. As I was coming out of DX, I saw that, and I was like, well, I'm, you know, like, one, I don't like being a babyface. Two, like, these guys need a Darth Vader, you know, as you had two, because you could just see that Rock, like, from the moment I met him, I was like, dude, this guy is so charismatic. Like, he just going to take this to a whole nother level personality wise, as soon as he figures out what that is. And he did. So they needed, you're only as good as the opposition, right? The antagonist only as good as a protagonist, and vice versa. So I knew that spot. So then I wanted that king bad guy spot.
Yeah.
But it just worked for the two of us. My only regret of the whole thing with Rock is in 2000, we were poised to have a match at WrestleMania one-on-one. And I think that would have been an epic thing for both of us in that moment. The timing of Taker's return and Austin's return, and Austin wasn't quite ready yet. So they pushed the WrestleMania match, and it's the year that we did this like fatal four-way with Foley, who I had just retired, coming back like a month later with his hair all cut because he thought he was off now forever, right? He was going to be a normal dude, and here he is back, and Big Show, and you know, like a month later or a couple of months later, we would have the one-on-one Iron Man match that we wanted to have at WrestleMania. And it's unfortunately for me, I always feel like it's the one thing, like, we got to this unbelievably heated long-term rivalry and then never got to pay it off on the biggest platform possible. And I think Rock feels that way too. It's why a couple of years ago we did a backstage little thing.
I saw that last night. Hilarious.
Yeah.
So funny.
And that was literally him coming to me and saying, like, dude, I want to do a match next year. I'd like to do it with you. Like, let us have that WrestleMania match we never got to have. And I was like, yeah, I'm in.
Why did that not happen?
His schedule.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Is that you guys had teased the match in like 2014 as well that you guys were supposed to have that didn't happen?
Yeah, it's happened a couple of times just, you know, schedule-wise or whatever, it just couldn't take place. But, you know, he's certain guys that I've worked with, you know, just Austin, I worked with, like, all the time, because when Sean was injured, even before I was in that position, I was doing all the main events with Steve because Sean was out, right, and getting ready for WrestleMania. And so I, of the opponents I worked with the most, it's probably Rock and Steve during that time frame. It was just every night. And one of the things that I realized with Rock is, you know, it's very competitive environment for all of us, and sometimes that competitiveness could get heated, and sometimes it was, we all got along, but it was, you know, it was competitive, and but we knew, like, it was magic. You know, like, I knew from the first time he and I got in the ring together and went at it, I was like, dude, the two of us have some chemistry here, like, this is just it's off the chart, and it's going to be really good.
I have a bit more of a technical question, because you are now the new head of creative, and you're talking about an era that was some of the most exciting sports entertainment quality standard era in history. And now I feel like, how do I say this? How do you continue to get that excitement and make this next generation thinking about and remembering the moments they're seeing today for the rest of their lives? Yeah. Because there's so much media out there and so much to consume, and people are getting lost in X and Y and Z. And we all remember the time when you were coming up, right? But do you feel that the WWE is as prominent and as much of a force as it was when you were on the come up?
So I do. Right, I think the global nature of what we do and the phenomenon of what we do, like how much it touches people and the emotion of it. There was a moment in time, I think, because it was so, I don't want to say new, because the Hogan era was so big. Steve and I used to stand at a curtain every night. Steve and I are both like the kind of guy that, like, I would go to the shows, I watch every match. Like, I'd have my gear on 30 minutes before the show, I'd be standing at that curtain watching everything.
A student.
Yeah, Steve's the same way. Yeah. So a lot of times, even when we were facing, we'd be like on opposite ends of the curtains, because then people wouldn't know that we were just 3 feet away from each other, right? In case they saw us. But we'd be watching the show and doing like running commentary with each other while it was going on. It was so fresh and so new. And we used to talk about all the time, God, you think this could ever get like it was in the 80s, right? Like with Hogan and stuff. And I remember very distinctly being in Pittsburgh one time, and the building was like half full, and we had that exact conversation. And then like maybe 2-3 months later, we were there and it was to the rafters, sold out like crazy. And the two of us were like, dude, this is insane. Like how big this has gotten. And it went like that. It went from, and it takes a spark in a moment to like capture people's imagination of something like that, something that wasn't even in their mindset 3 weeks ago, and then all of a sudden something happens that everybody is talking about, and all of a sudden it becomes the thing. Now, the world is different today, right? Like, so there's so many options of things that you can do, podcasts, television shows, TikToks, streaming stuff. You can watch anything when you want to watch it. You're not a slave to the moment in time of, well, this comes on at 9, and there's only 5 other really good things on at that time, even to watch. So, you know, what are you going to watch? The news? Are you going to watch WWE? That's different.
Even I'm sorry to interrupt, George. Everyone in the world has to be a bit more sensitive right now, and some of the more risky or some of the more exciting, like shock moments that we were able to have back then. You guys have done an incredible job of adapting, but I think part of the lore of professional wrestling is the hardcore nature of it, right? Like, you got guys in there who don't give a fuck, right? They're showmen. They'll put their bodies on the line. They'll, you know, hit people with objects and go crazy. But, you know, now you do have to work around those parameters a little bit more.
You do, but, like, I often think that, so a lot of times that stuff is overblown. It's the story, right? Like, if you watch a movie, and I always equate what we do to movies, right? If you watch a movie and it's just a slasher film, it's fun, but it's not going to stick with you forever. It's just blood and guts, and it's slashing, and everything's just like, who can do the more violent kill or the crazier kill or whatever that is, right? And what's the most ridiculous way somebody can die in this movie and have their guts come out and an eye pop out of their head or whatever that is, right? It's not, it doesn't stick with you. It's not memorable. It's the stories. Even in that era, we did a lot of crazy stuff that was mind-blowing and was shock television. But the reason it lasted was not because of the shock television. That's maybe what made you go, what was that? But what kept you there was the emotion and the storytelling. You don't need the shock if you tell the emotion and the storytelling, right? And there's moments in time of that through generations. I remember when I was a kid and, you know, everybody like General Hospital. When that, you guys don't really probably know what that is.
Oh, I do. Like, my mother watched it.
Of course, my mom watches it to this day.
There you go. And it was like the biggest moment in time of like this. I remember being a kid and this Luke Laura storyline, right? But the whole world's like the most captivating thing. And then like I can remember seeing it. Like my mom would record it every night. And I remember watching and think, this is the stupidest shit I've ever seen. Like it's terrible. The acting's bad. Like it's just terrible. But like the whole world was absolutely captivated by it because the story was so good. Like then once you watch it for a couple of times, you're like, oh yeah, now what's he gonna do next? I don't. This is crazy. It's the story. It really is. So the other stuff, while it's cool, after a while, I'm friends with a guy named John Milius. John Milius wrote Conan, Apocalypse Now. Right, like
classics,
epic. Wrote the scene in Jaws where he talks about the Indianapolis and the whole, right, like just a crazy good writer. And one time he said to me, we were talking about movies and our business, and he goes, "Machine gun fire is boring after 5 seconds. No one cares, but I can make you a 30-minute scene in a movie with one bullet, one gun, one guy with a gun to another guy's head, and tension, and you'll never forget it for the rest of your life."
Right.
It's like 1,000 bullets versus one.
Yep.
Drama versus one. One that makes you have angst and feel, and oh my God, what's going to happen next? I think about it all the time, like Inglourious Basterds, right? Like the opening scene with the guy at the farmhouse and the people are under the floor, and you're like sweating watching the scene, right? Like you'll never forget that scene. I've seen people run across the screen a million times, and not there's anything wrong with that.
Chainsaw.
That's a part of what makes movies great.
Yep.
I just need something mindless and go watch some people get murdered.
Well, it's like, right? Well, it's like you think about horror movies, and everybody's, you know, you would think everybody's mind would go to Jason and Freddy Krueger, but like one of the greatest horror movies ever that everybody remembers is The Shining. You know what I'm saying? And it's
and
like,
please name the big horror, like the horrible gory special effects scene in there.
There's a little blood in the hallway with the two girls, but it's short, right?
It's not somebody getting their head chopped off. Right? Like it's the emotion and the feel, and it scares the shit out of you, right? Like, look, the magic of Jaws. I mentioned that movie a bit ago, right? Like, people wouldn't swim for forever, right?
Some don't still.
You hardly ever saw the shark, and it was a mistake because the mechanical shark wouldn't work.
Right.
Right? So they had all these scenes with the shark eating people and doing all this gory shit, and then the shark wouldn't work, so they had to just hide it, just show a fin coming through the water or the barrels dragging along the water with the music, and you knew the shark was coming. That's like really being in the ocean. You can't see the shark.
It goes back to what we mentioned earlier. It's sometimes it's about what you don't say, what you don't show, 100%. Those moments of silence and making people captivated by silence. 100%.
But getting that, and then you can know that, but in the moment when there are, you know, like in that moment tomorrow when there's 50,000 people there and they're going apeshit, to have the balls to wait, to have the balls to be silent, to take the risk of that quiet to get to the next level. That's a risk. And a lot of people don't have the guts to take it. But if you do, there's magic on the other side.
Can I suggest something?
Yeah.
What the fuck do I know? But I'm going to put on my...
But you're a fan. So you do know.
Yeah. Yeah, but I haven't always been. Not true. I have been, but now I'm a fan, right? I'm invested. Yeah. And so are all my friends. I'm going to put on my creator brain as I say this, because we don't come from inside out, inside the WWE universe and out. We came from outside in.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we're in and I'm in, we're all invested. You know, my girl now, never watched this in her life, is she came to MSG. She goes, oh my God, I'm in now. So while I 100% agree that the story at the end of the day is the thread that the spine of this organization and operation, I am also a disruptor, right? I like those big viral moments. I like those hooks that grab the globe's attention. And I think if there was a way to, you know, tastefully, I don't want to go too shock and awe, too, like, you know, decapitate, show the guts and everything. Yeah. But if there's a way to create those moments to hook people who aren't normally invested in the WWE and then get them invested with the rich nature of the stories, I think that's where you guys are going to crush. And honestly, that's where I would like to help out as well. Yeah. Because I don't come, again, from this world. I come from, like, mainstream, like, how do I make you care with a fucking 6-second Vine and then now attach you to my decade-long almost career that people are still watching?
Yeah.
And I think, like, if there's a way to weave those two worlds, you know, WWE is a universe. Let's make this shit a multiverse.
Yeah, look, dude, couldn't agree with you more. I think you're, like, just saying that, it's genius, right? Like, to me, that's where it's at. Mm. You inherently get this. It's why you're where you are, right? Like, you inherently get the vibe of today's kids and the young adults and what they're looking for and all that. And when I say the story stuff, it's not like the story has to be there, but the special effects got to be good when you do them. And you got to have the commercial moment to sell the movie, because, like, there's a million great movies out there that nobody gave a shit about and or watched because there was nothing that hooked them to go see it. Right, you have to have that hook, and you have to have those things, and dude, like we want to work with you for that reason
that's
the thing. I'm old, dude. I don't know how to figure out some of those things across what you're talking about.
Yeah,
it's why people like you do.
It's why I'm excited, especially because I mean, like, Vince was so good to me. I think I was the last superstar he signed. I mean, I'm not a superstar yet, but I think it was the last, you know.
You are. You signed a paper that made you a superstar.
Yeah, I got there. and you know, I've been kind of getting my feet wet, and I've been in Gorilla and backstage, and every time after my thing, I shake his hand, and he's sitting in the corner there. And last week at MSG, it was you know? And so I think there's a really interesting opportunity to do some shit that has not been done before. So I'm going to be pitching ideas all the time at you. And
I'm counting on it, dude.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
I'm counting on it. Look, I'll say this about Vince. Massive shoes that I couldn't even dream of beginning to think I could fill, right? Like, the gap there in this moment is massive. But the opportunity to take it in a direction that it's never gone before is massive. I'm thrilled for that opportunity. We have an unbelievable team that it's never going to be one person. One person can't even begin to fill his shoes. It's going to take an entire team of people to jump in those shoes, because without him, there's none of this, right? Like, the vision to take it from this tiny little thing happening in bars and to this big, to global sensation like nothing else, right? You know, WrestleMania is one of the most valuable sports franchises on the planet. Yep. Billions of social media followers, the 70 plus billion lifetime views on YouTube, right? Like, the level of fan interaction, following, and dedication and passion for what we do, there's nothing like it. And I'll put any sport against that, and I'll put any form of entertainment. Certain movies only resonate in certain countries. Certain sports only resonate in certain countries. Name one that goes everywhere.
Yeah.
It's WWE.
On the topic of social media and you know, how it's going to play with the WWE, we're in the era of social media creators, influencers, whatever you want to call them. When I don't know how the idea of Logan Paul joining the WWE got to your desk, but candidly, what were your feelings and what were your thoughts when you first heard that Jake Paul's older brother was going to join be honest, like, be completely honest.
Maybe completely honest. Yeah. So who the fuck is that? Yeah.
Who? He's not the demo. You're not the demo.
Yeah. No offense. Like, it's funny, because sometimes people talk about our business, go like, well, I watched a little bit when I was a kid. That means I never watched. And they don't want to offend me or something like that. Like, yeah, that's not for everybody. Yeah. So but, when they first said it, Christian Prouty walked in, talked all about it, and I'm like, I don't know who that is. Like, I no
KP, let's go.
Yeah, I had no idea. And then they told me, and then I started looking at it, and I was like, holy shit. These dudes are massive, right? And I have kids, right? And they're watching all this stuff. And then now it's on your radar. So now you start hearing people talk about it, where if I would have heard people talk about it before, I wouldn't have ever paid attention to it. Now you start paying attention to it. Like, this thing is huge. We got to get with this guy. And then, you know, even then, I can tell you, over the years, a million celebrities have come up to us and said, I want to be a WWE superstar. I want to do it so bad, right? That all sounds great on paper. First time they hit the mat, they're like, yeah, so I was thinking maybe I could help with commentary, or I could, you know, I could do something else, because that shit hurts. Yeah.
Gary Busey, Nick Nolte. This isn't for you.
It's a lot of that, or, you know, and they just don't get it. But then when they do, it's a different story. Then there are certain folks that come into it that are just like invested in it, and then that's when I light up, right? If somebody comes in and they just want to hook their wagon to it for a minute, or they want to promote a film, that's exciting. But when somebody comes in like you and goes, hey, this is awesome, I'd like to be a part of this, and then when they come in and they kill it, you see that level of, because, you know, to do what you did, right, it's like Bad Bunny, same thing. And I don't give this easy, right? Because I've done this for a long time, put my life on the line for it, and seen other people do the same. Respect in our business for what we do is tough to get. And I don't give it easy. Taker doesn't give it easy, right? The people at the top are like, yeah, you got to earn it. And it's a lot to earn, right? You earned my respect.
Thank you.
Big time. Bad Bunny earned my respect big time, because to do what you did, you had to dedicate yourself 100%. I don't even mean just going to the gym for a couple hours and going through the motions and doing the stuff. I mean dedicate yourself to it. Like, you woke up in the morning thinking about it, you went to bed at night thinking about it, right? That's the difference to me. And when you can do that, now I want to help you succeed.
Yeah.
I want to help somebody go, because I know what that's like. I know it's the greatest gig in the world. If you can make somebody help somebody feel that, because they have a passion for it and they're willing to grind and they're willing to put in that level of dedication, take the risk, everything else, shit, yeah, let's go.
I have no problem earning respect. I've done it before, and I intend on doing it in the WWE. I will say, though, I do really feel like I have a bit of a cheat code, and I did hop to the highest level so quick, and I can kind of feel some of the other wrestlers sometimes with maybe a little chip on their shoulder, because, sure, you know, they put in years, decades even, of work to get where I am now. And
look,
if
a dude comes into a podcast next week, starts whipping your ass a month later, you're like,
we've been at this shit.
I'm gonna kill this guy. 100%. Yeah, what's going on?
And I feel like I get it. I don't know how I'm here. I just am. But I do want to commend all the people who have been doing this, you know, for the majority of their life, like most of my now peers have been. And I know you are big in recruitment, which I think is going to be massive in the future of the WWE, right? NIL, you mentioned, next in line, at the beginning.
That's huge for us.
Yep, and NXT as well?
Yeah. So, you know, NXT started, we created...
With you, right?
Yeah, I mean, us, right? Like, so as a company, Vince and I sat down, this is years ago. Obviously, I wore Steph out talking about it before that, but like, you know, we talk about it, and like, there was a moment in time where Vince was so successful at creating one brand, but in turn shut down all these territories and all the places that guys had to go learn this craft over time. And we started talking about it in a manner of saying, like, we're like 10 years from now, 20 years from now, we're screwed. Like, where are these guys coming from?
Yeah.
And somebody's got to teach them, because the guys were out there learning, but it was not good. And somebody had to teach them properly and correctly and teach them how to do it right. So how do you do that? How do you get better quality athletes? How do you get better quality humans? All that stuff. You build a performance center. You make it, you know, at the time, you make it super cutting edge, where a professional athlete that is thinking about doing this, you know, can walk in and go like, oh yeah, this is like, even if to learn, the money's not great up front, but I get to be an athlete in a place like this, I'll do this every day for a while and see if I can do this. you know, that's the kind of stuff that cuts it. Then you need a brand for them to learn on. So we created NXT. We rolled with that. You know, the difficulty for us has been and always been on the recruiting side, finding people with the passion to do this, with the athletic skill to do this, the charisma to do it, which is king, and then the right human beings. Mm. The biggest pool of people to do that is collegiate athletics, right? It just is. It's why the NFL can let go of 500 players a year, because they have this ocean of talent coming into them at any point in time. And for every person that's in college football waiting to get in the NFL, there's hundreds that are in other sports that no one looks at, and there's no professional avenue for them. And like, yeah, when you get done being a hammer thrower, like your gig is, yeah, I either coach or I get a gig doing something else, whatever I got my degree in. But we couldn't engage with those collegiate athletes because of NCAA rules and all that, right? Even though we're an entertainment company, we risked their eligibility, and it was difficult. Once NIL hit, it was a game changer because I could immediately talk to all these athletes and offer them this opportunity, which for a vast majority of them were like, oh my God, I grew up watching this. Like, this is the opportunity of a lifetime. And I get to, I'm 21 years old. Man, I'm going to take this shot for a couple of years and be an athlete, have all the things that the Big E and I were talking about this just the other day about the recruiting process, because while he's out with his injury, he's kind of like helping be a part of this. And, you know, he was saying how devastating it was for him. He's in college. Everything in his life was football and athletics and that camaraderie of team, the drive, the grind, all the things that go on being a pro athlete. And then all of a sudden he graduates college and he's like, it all just stops. That all goes away. And like, so what do I do with my life? And that drive, I get a job. Well, that's great. But this, it isn't anywhere near the same level of anything. So to now have that opportunity for these kids to go like, well, wait a minute. I'm not going to go to the Olympics or whatever. And I'm not going to be a pro hammer thrower. And I'm not going to do all these other things. What can I do? And WWE throws an opportunity at you, which many of them probably had thought about. Man, I'd love to do that. Is how do you do it? I have no idea, you know? Now we're getting right out to them and saying, like, come with us.
Yep.
Right? We have some college athletes on NIL deals where they're, you know, ours is different. We're not looking for a transactional thing where we, you know, like a chicken company where we go like, here's a few grand. Like, say you love our chicken. You know, we're working with athletes that want to be a part of WWE that we can invest in. We're looking for long-term recruiting opportunities with these people and how we can make them long-term, you know, bigger. And they promote us. So every contest they go to, every game they go to, everything they go to, they're representing WWE. They're like a walking billboard. Mm. And then when they get to the end of their college career, we've worked with them on how to be a you know, their finances. We've worked with them on social media. We've worked with them on how do you make yourself a brand, right? We've worked with them on all that, so they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. If they don't come with us at the end of it, great. They've been a billboard for us for 2 years or 3 years or whatever it's been. If they do come with us, we're already way ahead of the game in who they are as human beings and as athletes and everything else under the sun. So it's the perfect mix for us.
Dude, that 360 degree like breeding, if you will, is so important and sharp. Whoever implemented that, like, kudos. Because I can only imagine, like, we've even suggested this to Dana White, if the UFC had a program where they were like 360 degree breeding their fighters and they came in with in the ring or the octagon with the enthusiasm, excitement, charisma, branding, personality of if every UFC fighter was a Conor McGregor, you know?
Yeah.
Or any WWE superstar.
But if you're just sitting waiting, like we can create, or we can have the attempt at least to create a Conor McGregor. And we do.
You have a ton of them.
We have all Conors. Generationally, right? Yeah. From Bruno Sammartino.
Yeah.
All the way through to Roman Reigns right now and everything in between. And you can even throw Brock Lesnar into that list, because where did he learn to do the personality, charisma, all those other things that he had, right? Mm-hmm. Like, athletically, yes. But the rest of it, like, from us, so his level of promotion and all that stuff was next level when he went to UFC. And that's what he jumped off on. But yeah, if they can do that, but what boxing and all those sports do is they're just waiting for the next generational
talent.
Yeah, he's waiting for somebody to come along that captivates you, right? And we're different. We can control that environment. We can control the, and we also can control the narrative long term. I remember having a conversation with Dana right when they were going into China, and the Chinese national girl was fighting for the title.
Yeah.
We saw him at the ESPYs, and he was like, you know, I was congratulating him on the movement into China and all. And he said, yeah, and I need her to win. And right. And he was like, it's all just, if she gets killed, it's all for nothing. If she wins, man, we're on fire. And I said to him, like, it's the magic of what we do. I know she wins with us.
True. Cause she lost, I think.
I don't recall, I don't recall at the time how that went. I thought she won, but I'm not positive.
No,
that,
I also apparently don't recall.
We just got the 5 minute sign from our producer Dylan. I want to ask.
I thought you ran this.
Not really. He's the boss, or at least he also throws us up symbols that we don't even know what he's saying. Sometimes he does this.
He like runs by and gives you gang signs.
We're like, what are we supposed to do with this info?
I think he wants to fight us. But, I don't know. I'll throw it out. All right.
Well, actually, Logan had tried to add some physicality to today's podcast, and I looked at our PDF this morning and said, "Please, no wrestling."
That's not true. I did not. Dylan pitched it.
You guys can have Dylan. At it all you want. I'm of a watch mode now, so like I'll critique it.
Well, wait, ask him. I'm over Steph. Here. Ask about Steph.
Not participating.
I want to talk about Steph a little bit.
Let's go.
Steph is right there.
Yeah.
Your wife, daughter of Vince?
If you want her to whip your ass, go ahead. I don't care.
No.
You want to get her involved?
I don't want any problems.
I'm scared of her. You should be too. Yeah, let me just say.
All my bosses are in this room.
You've been hit hard. Her slap will take your eye out of your head. I'm just saying.
I believe you. Just real quick, the last like thing is I can't believe how like familial now this organization is, right? She's in charge. And now you're, again, the head of creative, and you guys work in tandem, and you work in tandem at home because you're married. You have kids?
Yeah, three kids.
God,
three girls, 16, 14, 12.
I'll be honest with you. It sounds like a nightmare.
It's a lot. The 16-year-old just started driving, just got her permit. I'm starting to teach the 14-year-old now a little bit. I'm panicking about the little one trying to learn how to drive because she's the nut job. But it's going to be...
Wait, so how does...
I love you, Stinker.
I love you, Stinker.
I mean that job in the best way possible, yeah.
But okay, so you're both so busy and you're always here. I see. Who is raising these children?
We just put some... We put kibble out.
Okay.
And some water. And we just lock the door so they can't get out, and then just let them go.
What's the biggest challenge of working alongside the person you're married to? Because I work with my spouse as well, so I know there's quite a bit of challenges there. Like, what's the biggest challenge you guys have found?
I mean, honestly, if I was to look at her always being right, that's the hardest.
Yeah, how much of that happy wife, happy life carries into the
sometimes boardroom. It's just hard to swallow, but you just have to do it. I'm gonna get slapped when I do. Yeah.
No, it's just wild, you know, because it started as a storyline, correct?
That's why we always joke that our marriage works so well, like almost 20 years. And like, I think we're more in love now and happier now than we were even then, which is really cool. Like being married to your best friend is awesome. But we always say it works the best because we had a dry run on TV. We were married.
Do you still have a writer now?
Yeah. Had rehearsal. Yeah.
Have three daughters.
I need to have a chat.
Don't talk back.
I need to have a chat with the writer. But we were married, had a violent divorce, the whole thing on TV. So we know what it's all like.
We got it out of the way.
Yeah, we got it out of the way. We're all good now.
Well, Steph, thanks. And Nick. And
Nick, our co-CEO. My booking assistant over there, Sonny Khan, is my booking assistant. I'm going to go pick his brain.
Drink Prime.
I'm going to go pick his brain for some good ideas on SummerSlam later today.
Amazing. Well, I want to give, and KP too, you guys all a personal thank you for trusting me and welcoming me with open arms into this business. Like, it is a lot. And I'm glad that there's trust between us, that you guys trust in me.
to do what I need to do to put on a great show and continue propelling this organization forward.
I love working with you because of what I said earlier, your passion for this. Mm. Dude, when I looked over from Gorilla the night you were going to go out there and I said that, walked over and said this stuff to you, I could see it in your eyes as you were staring at the ground, getting yourself into it. I could feel it coming out of you. And I was like, this dude is like, he's one of us. He's as passionate about this. This is in his soul right now. That's why I went over and talked to you, right? Like when somebody has that level of passion, I can't help but want to go over there and work with them. And if there's some way that I can assist them to get it even more and become even bigger, man, I'm all over it. So for me, thank you for the passion for it, because not everybody has it. Some people come in here differently, and you have it, and thank you for having it. And I look forward to, we're going to take WWE to places it's never been.
Yeah.
And how we're going to partially do that is by working with people like you that can help us get to places that we haven't even thought of yet.
For sure.
Right? And vice versa for you. Hopefully we make you even bigger than you ever thought
for
you
sure.
could possibly be.
For sure. Sounds nice.
Right? That's the goal in all of this. I don't think there's anything as a brand, as a product, when people ask us where we see this thing going, we're Disney. We're not, you know, we're going to be bigger long term. You talked about the multiverse. It's like,
let's do it.
All those things that are there for us in front of us, the exponential growth and where we can go and where we can take this and the desire to, and no one's going to stop us.
I love that, man. Wow. This has been an honor. I'm going to go stretch because I have a match tonight at SummerSlam in front of 50,000 people.
When they asked me to do this and they said, well, you can do it that morning, I'm like, should he do it that morning? Because I feel like I'm good doing it that morning, but I feel like he's going to be kind of like thinking about later. Maybe we should do it a different time.
Yeah.
They said you're fine with it.
So wait till you see him at 2 a.m. at his after appearance.
Yes.
amazing. Paul, boss, sir. Triple H, thank you for coming on Impulsive, man. The number one podcast in the world.
Honored.
If you guys are not subscribed, hit that subscribe button. Before we go, really quickly, George, you were so quiet this whole episode. Do you have anything to say about Jesus? Anything?
Yeah, it's always a Jesus joke. So this is what happened, man. Like, you intimidate the fuck out of me, and I didn't want to interrupt you.
You should be.
Yeah, and like, I love Jesus, but I'm not ready to meet him just yet. So.
and for context, there's like 30 people watching from WWE.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
That all could fire Logan. So like, they could fire my boss. So what the fuck am I gonna do here?
That trickles downhill, right? Yep. That firing trickles downhill. Yeah,
first generation, still trying to keep it in America.
Yeah. All right, we love
you're
you.
You're doomed.
Thank you. Peace, y'all.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.